thought we'd start this off. But I mean, I've done it right now.
It sounds really good.
Voice actually, like,
what about chewing sounds?
I don't think it's strength.
You don't?
No.
Can I do it throughout the whole episode?
Well, do you have enough donuts?
There's a lot of recording we're going in.
True.
Oh, hi.
Well, hello there.
Hi there. It's been a while. It's been
too long.
Too long. My friends and colleagues and students, really, is what you ultimately all are for Kevin and I. So welcome to this week's episode of Know It All with Tay and Kay. I'm Tay.
I'm Kay.
And this week, I think I would go so far as to say that today's episode of Tay and Kay is about one of the most important topics of all time. And we say that a lot, but we really...
But this is so important that we can't even cover it all in one episode.
Yeah, that's correct. This is merely part one in a sprawling, magnanimous, all-encompassing three-parter about
the founding fathers. I like to think of them as founding dads.
It's a story of the coming together of some of the greatest minds in the history of the world.
It's a story of love. A
story of war.
A story of greed.
Peace.
Revolution.
Intoxication.
Cooperation.
Invention.
Constitution.
And a story of birth.
Whose birth,
you ask? Why, mine, yours, Kevin's, even Logan's, maybe. We're talking about the birth of America.
Many people qualify the founding fathers as those who signed the Declaration of Independence, which would be 56, which is simply too many dads to have.
Yeah, a founding father has to have a more substantial role in the birth of the U.S. than simply a signature, as we will soon find out.
Mm-hmm.
The way we see it, there are nine founding fathers. The other 47 are simply founding stepfathers.
Each of the founding fathers was brilliant in their own right, but we have Benjamin Franklin to thank specifically for making this episode especially special.
Benjamin Franklin was aware of his genius from a very young age and wallowed in regret whenever he forgot a good idea or an important conversation. So from the age of 16, he developed the habit of taking dictation of every conversation he was involved in or privy to.
Many of the actual meetings of this revolutionary cabal were recorded word for word, and just flipping through these fragile parchments, you can smell the history.
Smells like Logan.
Surprised?
Not at all. This country was a real dump before GW and the gang turned it around.
And to truly bring these paragons of virtue to life, we have acquired the talents of some local Revolutionary War reenactors to provide the voices of our founding fathers.
Kevin and I have, of course, given ourselves roles as well.
But don't let that distract you from the history. Now let's take a journey back in time, shall we? All the way back to 1770, United States of America.
Whoa, Kevin. We hadn't declared ourselves an independent nation in 1770. At this point, America was merely 13 slightly connected colonies owned and controlled by the British, which could mean only one thing.
Taxes, taxes, taxes!
English people, by all outward appearances, are a fine and dandy bunch whose charming witticisms and awkward love of formalities could bring a smile to even the Führer's face. However, even the most impoverished Brit has a deep-seated love for taxes, and King George III was no exception.
You might even say he was the rule.
We
have him to thank for the Stamp Act, the Sugar Act, the Infant Act, the
Declaratory
Act, among others, all of which tested the patience of the colonies. What really did it, though, was a trio of taxes known as the Three Act, imparted at the same time, the Ale Act, the Exotic Meats Act, and the Tea Act.
The colonists, despite largely coming from England, hated the taxes, sometimes taking out their frustration on English soldiers stationed in the colonies, mocking them in their gaudy red uniforms with their gross teeth.
King George III was notorious for his halitosis, a condition exacerbated by his tendency to talk close. Those who were truly loyal to him refused to clean their teeth.
And even though the colonists had mostly not developed a dialect apart from their oppressors, the English had stupid accents.
Let me take you now to a frigid March day in Boston, 1770. Winches and pulleys suspended from freshly tarred ropes clank against one another in the breeze.
Clank.
The smell of freshly boiled seagulls wafts through the city streets. And every 100 feet or so stands a man in red. The British army had been sent to Boston Harbor to enforce George III's litany of tax acts. Individual soldiers were assigned to shadow each individual dock worker, ensuring that not a single movement went unrecorded or untaxed.
Could you imagine lugging around a heavy crate of barnacles or whatever it was they ate in the past an obnoxious, foul-breathed Brit stopping you at every 10 feet to demand payment for this and that?
That's exactly what a young man...
A young black man.
Yes, named Crispus Attucks had to deal with firsthand. According to the recently passed Quartering Act, Attucks was required to pay 8 pence for each quarter mile of the city he traversed by foot.
Crispus, though, like a true patriot, refused to pay the man, and they began to quarrel loudly, quickly seducing a crowd to encircle them.
Within minutes, the crowd began chanting, "Bottle fight! Bottle fight!"
A traditional way to settle disputes in Massachusetts.
Soon, bottles rained forth upon the two, unintentionally drawing the eye of a neighboring royal patrol. They were keen to collect the entertainment tax on our sacred tradition, but would have to carve a path to the center of the circle to do so.
And on the way, a bottle hit one of them in the head.
Yeah, it comes with the territory.
They became incensed and opened fire on the dueling pair, spooking the crowd and making them run for cover, foolishly, for running in a port, too, was taxable.
The soldiers fired into the crowd, demanding money from every onlooker until 5 innocent lives were claimed, first and foremost the aforementioned Crispus Attucks, the first victim of the revolution.
From the third-story balcony of a nearby brownstone, an imposing figure looked upon the massacre with a troubled heart. He went for a swig from his large flask, but it was bone dry.
His snuffbox, too, was empty. Shaken, he descended to the boardwalk to find booze.
Eventually, he stumbled upon Samuel Adams' pub, owned and operated by the ex-pirate himself. He walked through the door and gazed upon a collection of dirty, drunk, lascivious men and women, bringing their carousing to a halt upon his entrance. He sauntered up to Adams behind the bar and he ordered a lager.
Just then the music started back up, and an angelic tenor voice sprung up over the piano and began singing a propagandistic song of British loyalty.
"For just a smile I'll give you my land. Simply ask and I'll lop off my hand. Anything to grant me my solitary wish, to live and die under rule of the British."
The imposing man turned his gaze and transfixed it on this figure, this man, singing of the greatness of national oppression. His blood began to boil. Samuel Adams recalls seeing him crush his steel beer stein in one hand while seething with anger.
In a moment, he arose from his bar stool and loudly called out the man on stage.
"Your words are a lie! Were King George in front of me this instant, I would uppercut his anus, grab hold of his guts, and turn him inside out!"
The man on stage responded by saying,
"A threat to the throne is a threat to me, and I would defend with my life the name of King George III.
He then grabbed a nearby whiskey bottle, broke it upon the piano, and brandished it as a weapon.
"Bottle fight!" chanted the crowd. At this point, the pub cleared out almost completely. Only the pianist, Sam Adams, our imposing man, and the stage performer remained. Both of these men were poised to attack.
Samuel Adams chimed in.
"Now no one gets hurt in my bar unless I do the hurting."
Which garnered the now legendary response from the imposing man.
"No one's going to get hurt. One of us is about to die, but I promise he won't feel a thing."
The two men stared each other down.
That is, until the man on stage relaxed, lowered his bottle, and smiled. "You win, boss. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Benedict Arnold, and I am an actor, playwright, musician, painter, singer, obviously, satirist, and ferocious patriot, and fighter for independence. What you have just witnessed, or interrupted rather, was my one-man show, More Like Great Britain, which I wrote with one intention and one intention alone, to inspire patriotism and spark revolution against the British, which, if I may say so, I have achieved in you, good sir."
Arnold held out his hand for the man to shake. He loosened his beer-covered fist, dropped his stein to the floor with an abrasive clank, took Arnold's hand and shook it.
"George Washington."
Arnold, Adams, and the pianist, who had been dictating and illustrating the events unfolding in front of him, all came to a halt. They had heard this name before.
The man at the piano lumbered to his feet. He was a worn man with an impressive belly and an inspired comb-over. He hobbled to the bar, cane in hand. His raspy voice let forward a declaration of peace.
"You're George Washington? I think I need to buy you a drink. Sam, 3 pints and 6 shots of whiskey. The name's Benjamin Franklin. It would appear that it's just the 4 of us now, so why don't we get cozy? What say, Sam, we lock the door, doff our powdered wigs, and talk politics?"
Hours passed, and the ideas they developed in that evening would tear the world apart and rebuild it in the immaculate image of the Brotherhood of the Eagle.
Before we get to that, though, we should take a word from our sponsors.
Cotton candy!
So sweet!
So fun!
So colorful!
So spongy!
So aromatic!
Cotton candy is the perfect snack or dessert for any time or place, formal or casual.
True, but did you know that cotton candy is also a versatile textile as well?
Say what?
Harvested in big patches of blue and pink fields.
How iconically American.
Spun and woven cotton candy is quickly becoming America's most beloved material for the manufacture of clothing.
Whoa, wait a minute, Kevin. So, cotton candy has all of the benefits of regular cotton. Strength, warmth, affordability, variety.
Of course.
All while being totally delicious?
How else?
Oh, wow. Anywhere, at any time, I can stand out from all the conformists in my fluorescent pink and blue swirls, and I'll also have access to a tasty, healthy snack whenever I feel peckish.
You bet. Just remember to stop before you get to your briefs. Cotton candy, filling tummies and wardrobes for over 60 years. Through his years of flirting and carousing, Benjamin Franklin gained connections from Canada to Georgia. He quickly dispatched letters to five men, requesting their presence for a super-secret meeting in Sam Adams' pub.
1 month later, the eight men assembled. This is the actual transcript from the first official meeting of the Brotherhood of the Eagle.
All right. First of all, that's Sam behind the bar. He owns the place. Tip him well. He pours heavy. Now, you have all been called upon to assist in what may define all of our lives. We require your specific talents in order to emancipate ourselves from the British. You all received a letter describing why you've been summoned here. So rather than me going through all the rigmarole, I have this ball. This is the talking ball. Whoever has the ball is going to stand up, say their name, why they're here, and then just an interesting fact about yourself before passing the ball to someone else in the circle. For example, I'm George Washington.
Hi, George Washington.
That was unnecessary. I'm here to lead an army against the British, and I have a coffee table made of scalps. Heads up.
Oh, hello. I'm Benedict Donald. My role here is organization, intelligence, insurgency, and, I love cats.
Yeah. Oh, wow, cats, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Hey, all. I'm John Hancock. Yes, the John Hancock. But it's cool. You can call me Johnny, no big deal. Really, you'll find I'm just a regular person, like all of you. So what can I tell you about me you don't already know? I've got a newspaper column, obviously, so no, that doesn't count. Oh, I know. I have perfect diction. Well, I guess you probably already figured that out. So that doesn't count either. Oh, how about one time there was this really big tree, and I knocked it over with one kick? True story.
One kick?
Wait till you have the ball.
Yeah, one kick.
James Madison. Look, I ain't here to talk about cute stories about myself. I'm here to crack heads, break legs, and make sure all of yous is safe. Got it? I also just composed my first concerto for the harpsichord.
A gentle lob of the ball will do. Good evening, everyone. My name is Benjamin Franklin. I'm an inventor, chemist, scribe, lover of life, arts, women, and the occasional man. Connoisseur of wine, spirits, beer, opium, mushrooms, you name it. My role in this elaborate game we are playing is that of the sage. I'm a tactician of sorts. I have ideas, plans, connections, talents, and experience. I am also holding, if anyone is in the market, little tidbit about me. I can tie a cherry stem in a knot with my tongue.
Sup, everybody. The name is Alexander Hamilton, and I'm here for one reason and one reason only. Cash. You want that paper? I know how to get it. I know how to turn $10 into $100 with little more than a flick of my quill. I got so many people owing me money at such audacious interest rates that my family is set for 6 generations, and I haven't really worked in 17 years. I rule that cash, and cash rules everything around me, baby. Oh, cream. I'm also quite the green thumb.
Jeez. Oh, okay. I'm John Jay. Hi, everyone. I'm a lawyer, and according to the letter I got in the mail, I'm going to be taking care of all the paperwork, which I'm sure to you all sounds terrible, but really, it's quite perfect for me. I've actually been on the road a lot, and away from my wife and kids. Too much. That's what's really important. So, I will gladly be your home base, and dot the I's and cross the T's, and make sure all the papers are correctly notarized and filed. It would be an honor. So, I know I already said this about me. I'm happily married, going on 8 years now. Margaret is her name. And we have 9 beautiful kids. Nancy, Samuel, Bartholomew, Grace, Nina, which are twins, Alfred, Paul, Susan, and David. David just learned to walk.
Greetings, everyone. I'm John Adams. I have witnessed firsthand in the last few minutes that my work is truly cut out for me. I am here because clearly none of you have the ability to communicate with any real sense of place, tact, self-awareness, balls, or in some cases, grammar. I'm here because you need me to do your battles in the Houses of Parliament, in our courthouses, and when the time comes, in our Houses of Confederation. You need me to lead the war of words. I will. Not because I want to, but because I feel it an honor or a privilege. No, I will do it because any of you would so obviously fuck it all up. By the way, I'm a Virgo.
John Adams passes the talking ball to a very attentive young man awkwardly milling near the outskirts of the circle. The young man catches the ball and freezes. You have the talking ball, son. Tell us about yourself.
Who is that?
Oh, yes. How foolish of me. Gentlemen, this is Thomas Jefferson.
He has the ball, Ben. He can speak for himself.
I'm afraid not, actually. Young Thomas here suffers from a debilitating stutter. A stutter so bad that 10 years ago today he vowed to give up the spoken word for the written word, and what I could only describe as a natural penchant for overwhelmingly evocative gesticulation. He is a ferocious believer in freedom and personal expression. He has a cult following up and down the colonies, and he prefers to be called TJ.
How do you know all that?
He told me. Through a virtuosic pseudo-dance piece of sorts. It was incredible.
I dunno.
I do not wish to work next to this clown.
Of what use is this mute?
This boy gathered a crowd of 200 people on King Street today simply by physicalizing the process of canning tomatoes.
What?
It was the best 6 hours of theater I've ever seen.
Thomas Jefferson silenced Franklin with a wave of his hand and then proceeded to show his worth to the Brotherhood.
Franklin's transcription attempts to describe TJ's performance, but freely admits himself that his words never even came close.
John Adams, on the other hand, was a grumpy, sedentary old coot and had no problem articulating his distaste for Jefferson, saying,
"This weirdo is a truly obscene sight to behold."
Oh. No, John Adams. He is the voice of the revolution.
He can't speak.
Exactly.
But
he's in, John Adams. Deal with it.
Our first order of business is to gather as many like-minded individuals as possible and weed out those loyal to the crown. Anyone, feel free to just throw out something. No idea is a bad idea.
After several hours of bad ideas and several pitchers of ale, the Brotherhood landed on a concept which would quickly become the colonists' favorite pastime,
Brit Hunts, which we will divulge after another word from our sponsors.
Kevin, come here. I want to show you something I just invented.
Sure thing. Wow. What is that?
It's my invention. This simple device makes you immune to all illnesses and cures any that you may already have, including cancer.
No, not that. What is that smell? Is that pine?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Do you have a pine tree tucked away in your closet or bathroom or something?
No.
I didn't see any pine on the way here, so what is it? Is this house made of pine?
Mostly stucco.
Then Taylor, friend, How on earth are you possibly filling this room with the refreshing aroma of pine? Are you doing it with that fancy device?
No, this cures all diseases.
Then how?
I put an air freshener in my room.
Say what?
It's pine.
I knew it.
It's right over there.
Wow. So compact, and it's even shaped like a pine tree. How much did this set you back? $200?
It's like a buck.
No way. The intoxicating smell of pine in a compact, disposable, cute-shaped form for a completely reasonable price? This is going to change the world!
But my...
Pine-scented air fresheners. Change your world. Much like the witches of a century before, the British were tough to identify. After all, we had yet to develop our characteristic dialect, and powdered wigs were common even among the Brotherhood. So, how were patriots to identify the loyalists?
They found the answer was right under their noses. Their teeth. As mentioned before, loyalists refused dental care out of admiration for their king.
Rebellious colonists took the opposite approach, assiduously scrubbing their teeth till they gleamed like glazed porcelain. The colonies were soon all smiles all the time everywhere.
Anyone who dared strut around with their mouths closed were regarded with suspicion and hatred. Too much lip, and gangs of patriots would descend on the closet redcoats like puppies to a teat.
Once discovered, there was no escape for a Brit. A variety of humiliating punishments were meted out to loyal foul-breathed Englishmen.
Next to tarring and feathering, which we all know.
And love.
The most popular punishment was called Her Majesty's Spit.
Yeah, suspects were lowered into the deepest hole in town, and a sign imploring passersby to spit here was posted by its edge. The unhappy Brit would be mercilessly spat upon until they were soaked to the bone with minty fresh saliva. After a day, the offender was given some thread, a sprig of mint, and a small pine cone.
Nature's toothbrush.
And forced to clean them up! Now, all of this was good, clean, victimless fun on the surface, and it fostered in the masses a playful hatred of the English.
And while it did so, it was admittedly a base means of accomplishing that goal. The more disciplined brothers excoriated this anarchic hooliganism. This is taken from the Brotherhood's 8th meeting.
So basically, we just, you know, took these Brits, buried them up to their necks in sand, and put beehives on their heads.
I like it because it's free.
Right. I call it the beheading.
Not bad.
From outside, George Washington kicked the door so hard it came off the hinges and flew to the center of the room. Christ, George, that's the third door today.
You're late.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I miss out on last week's juvenile hijinks? Let me guess. Jay stole some British toddler's lunch money. Hamilton left a flaming bag of poo in front of those royal guards that isn't allowed to move. And Hancock force-fed a handful of Brits a town's worth of nail clippings.
2 out of 3 is pretty good.
I have had it with these petty pranks. Do you think this is a game? This is war.
Technically, we haven't declared war yet.
I have! And you, like a bunch of children, have just been flirting with tomfoolery. Meanwhile, I'm hearing from some of my spies that the British are planning a secret mission to destroy our ammunition supplies this very evening. Which, judging by your stupid faces, is news to all of you. Grow up, kids. War is for men, and games are for boys. Quit smiling. These pranks end today.
But George, how will we identify the British without smiling?
You won't.
Just then, Washington grabbed a ball-peen hammer and proceeded with 2 mighty swings to knock out all of his own teeth. He tore a handful of soil from a nearby potted plant, stuffed it in his bloody maw, and with perfect diction commanded,
"Get me Revere."
Paul Revere was a wealthy silversmith and dentist. That evening, while fitting Washington's mouth with a brand new set of hippo tusk teeth, Revere talked of the high-tech, lantern-based alarm system he and his partner had been tinkering with, and his lightning-fast mare, Sprinkles.
Washington was struck by Revere's 6-fingered hands and his crystal-clear baritone voice. Due to his chosen profession of oral care, it went without saying that Revere was a patriot. Washington contracted him then and there to put his alarm system to use.
That very night, Revere and his faithful sidekick Billingsley got to test the alarm system they had toiled over for so long. Billingsley waited in the North Church steeple to give the signal.
1 lantern would be displayed if the British were approaching by land, 2 if by sea, 3 if by digging an underground tunnel, 4 if by an armada of hot air balloons, and 5 if it was some terrible combination of the 4.
At 7:17, with his one good eye, through the fog, Billingsley spotted British ships sailing towards the river. Through the window of Sam Adams' pub, Revere spotted two lanterns, downed his drink, and rushed to Sprinkles.
With the lightning-quick speed of a man on horseback, Revere rode straight and hard through the night from Boston to Cambridge, shouting the entire time, "The British are coming!"
His bellowing baritone voice rumbled through the streets, shaking inhabitants into action. Unfortunately, he also alerted British guards stationed en route, and Revere and Sprinkles were both apprehended and questioned without completing the ride.
However, loyal Billingsley, against specific orders from Revere to remain in the steeple, took it upon himself to complete the ride.
At last, he reached Concord. Billingsley dismounted his horse, walked into the sheriff's office, and spoke for the first time in over 20 years.
"The British are coming." That's beautiful. Honorary founding father for sure.
Billingsley didn't need credit for completing the ride. He was content enough with the knowledge that after all of his toiling and sleepless nights, it worked. The alarm worked.
And as Revere's ride comes to an end,
so does the first part of our series on founding fathers.
Which could only mean one thing.
Listener mail?
Yeah!
Yes!
Okay, this week's listener mail, Taylor, comes from Margaret Holmes of North Richland Hills, Texas.
Hi, Margaret.
Margaret writes, "Dear TNK, I love the show almost as much as I love working in the kitchen. I was awestruck when I heard about Jesse James's cooking prowess, so much so that I had to take it upon myself to try out some of his recipes. James Cake is an unadulterated classic, of course. The Boysenberry Huckleberry scones were a nice surprise, but the real crowd pleaser I found is Jesse James's apocryphal shrimp pate on garlic crostini topped with a tri-tip mustard remoulade and lime zest, which I have included for you to judge for yourself. I find them scrumptious. Let me know what you think. Faithfully, Margaret Holmes."
Okay, thank you, Margaret. Let's crack this open.
Yeah,
hold on.
Let's try this out.
Hold on.
Oh.
Ooh. Oh, God. Ooh. Oh, God. Whew. That is
fresh.
Oof. That is ripe.
Well, let's try it.
All right. Yeah, really, that was...
That's all right.
That's not that bad for 5 months in a box.
Yeah.
Sitting at the bottom of our mail pile. That's... Honestly, Margaret, this is pretty good.
You're right. This has staying power.
Wow. Do you think the lime was what preserved it?
I am almost positive that that's what did it.
This is... Margaret, you should... If you want to send us more, feel free. Or if you have sent us more and there's more in the pile, we'll definitely... We're going to finish this.
Yeah,
thank you,
this
Margaret.
This was good. Wow. Thank you for that, Margaret.
So, you get a shout-out.
Ooh.
TNK Platinum subscriber subscription for free?
Yes. Absolutely.
Oh, God.
Thank you, Margaret.
On second thought, maybe not.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Ooh. Oh, God. Oh, man.
Just hurry up.
Ooh. Oh, I guess it's really... Oh, wow, Margaret. This is...
Wow. I can smell that burp from over here.
This is probably our fault. So join us next week for Founding Fathers Part 2, where we really get... Oh, God, into the thick of things.
Where the war starts.
Thank you for listening. Hope you join us next time. And this has been part one.
Say it. God, say it.
Thank you for listening to Know It All with Tay and Kay. I'm Tay.
I'm Kay. This episode of Know It All with Tay and Kay was brought to you by Doorknobs.